This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome to This Week in the NFL. I am not the Cowboy. I am JT, the Cowboy under the weather, and I could never turn down an opportunity to talk to my man, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato. Johnny, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. Unfortunately, the performance of the highly touted Panthers has left the Cowboy speechless.
Rendered him useless altogether.
That was like one of his hot picks. An early FU. That was one of his hot picks that he mushed. 0-2 at home.
Well, there were two 0-2 teams last year that actually made the playoffs. Why don't we just start there? Okay, because I know there's some big news we're going to get to, but we're here. Why not talk about it? We're fresh off the game last night. Tampa Bay defeats Carolina in Carolina 20-14. It was pretty inept for most of the game. Things picked up a little bit in the second half, and it kind of seemed to be a race of who would fuck up the least, and that was Tampa for most of the time. Look, Todd Bowles, you know, a lot's been said about him. Obviously a great defensive coordinator. They played very well. A lot of that, too, though, had to do with some of Carolina's game plan. John, what do you think the issue is? Is Cam just hurt, or why are they just not running this guy anymore?
You stole one of my main points, though, Bowles, a great defensive coordinator. You know, he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, probably not going to get another chance as a coach, but great. He took McCaffrey totally out of the game, and he put it in the hands of Cam. And obviously he can't make some of the throws that he used to. And even his running ability, there was a big fourth down play where he would have shook that defender or rolled or ran right over him 2-3 years ago. But wear and tear. Cam's take a lot of hits. He's been out there. He hasn't missed many games in injury, and eventually it's taken his toll. Sure, he's not the same.
I mean, he threw 50 passes last night, which is kind of crazy. He also, like, to me, the big one was at the end. Like, they didn't even trust him or feel that they could have him go up over the top for that last couple yards to win the game. And I get you get McCaffrey, I get you trying to run a play, but to me, that if you're going to do it at all, like, they're not doing it all game. If you're going to do it there, because maybe at least, even though most are expecting it, you haven't done it all game, why not give it a shot? Like, he's so tall, if he just leans over, he probably gets across. Like, that surprised me the most.
Yeah. But definitely, that's more kudos to Bowles. He totally took McCaffrey out the game. Usually, like, 0-2 is not a death knell, but, right. Man, 0-2, the first two at home, though, that's a big difference. That's a game changer where I don't think Carolina's going to recover from that. But 0-2 is not the stigma that it's been in the past. You know, the teams have overcome it, but the home thing really is a hurdle.
It is. And the tough thing for them, too, is the division. Right. So you got the Saints in there who obviously are going to be, you know, probably very good. I mean, luckily for them, Atlanta and Tampa, I think, are probably going to be middling at best. I would think, just based on what we've seen. I know it's very, very early, but just overall about the team construction. So I guess, you know, maybe I think the key to them is going to be, if they can somehow win the series with New Orleans, I think they can sniff and stay alive in the division. That's going to be their only chance. I think the NFC's got too many teams that will probably push them out of a wild card picture at this kind of start. But again, it's early. They are at Arizona, at Houston, which are very winnable, and then home for Jacksonville at Tampa. So their next four aren't like, you know, isn't the hardest schedule in the world. So they have the talent, they have the ability, but they need to start winning ASAP to have a shot. Do you think there's any validity to Tampa, or is this kind of just this game went the way it did and they're just going to kind of be a middle ground team?
There's validity because Arians, I have a lot of faith in him, and Bowles, as I've already blown him already. But Arians, definitely. But if he can't make something out of Jameis, I mean, it's not going to be coaching. It's just that Winston, you saw in the first game, he just has some awful throws. It seems like he's got all the twos, but it seems like on some awful throws where he's trying to, like, guide the ball or aim the ball, it's just not a fluid motion sometimes, and that's just all in the head. I mean, Arians as a coach can only do so much, but if he makes some of those awful throws, and, you know, he's led the whole NFL in turnovers, both interceptions and fumbles the last few years, if he can't clean that up, there's only so way they could go. But I think with the Arians coaching structure, they could surprise, and for them, like, eight wins would be a a major accomplishment. But you know, I got him pretty much in the 5 or 6 category. I'm down in this division. It's way early, but I got the Saints running away. We'll see.
And the problem, I mean, Tampa too has got so many weapons, like on offense, like they are pretty stacked. Like they got two great. I mean, Godwin is really coming into his own as predicted, and Evans is all world. So I mean, you got them. OJ Howard is a very good tight end. The running backs, okay, probably a soft spot, but they also have three like guys that can run. Like they're not completely useless there. Like Barber actually looked pretty good last night. Ronald Jones has shown some flashes. So you know, they're a team that definitely has the weapons if Aarons can get it figured out. But all right, so let's talk about the news around the league first before we get into looking back last week and any previewing any games for this upcoming week, week two. Obviously, the biggest story in the NFL is Antonio Brown forced his way out of Oakland, and within minutes, he was on the Patriots. The least surprising thing ever, I know your partner on the show, the Cowboy here, was adamant. He did not think the Pats would bring this guy in-house. I felt differently, as did many others, that if there was any place you could go and not really worry about the bullshit, it's New England, because if he sucks, or I mean, he's not gonna suck, but if he's an asshole and does shit, they're just gonna cut him, and they're not gonna be much worse off. If he works out, whatever, it's a steal, and maybe they'll win the Super Bowl by 40 instead of 10. So what did you think about A, what Brown did to get out of Oakland, and B, him ending up on the Pats? And then pause on that, and we'll talk about the stuff that happened once he signed there.
Well, I know there was everybody was not a Patriot fan is saying that, you know, the rules should be changed, and you know, this is garbage. There's you know, the Patriots, it's everything's geared towards the Patriots, but how many guys are going to be willing to give up $30 million guaranteed as far as Brown maneuvering his way out of the Raiders? But how many guys are willing to do that? If that's the case, then everybody could do that. Like Luck could wait 2-3 years to whenever his mm-hmm. contract runs out, and he could decide to succeed Brady, and he would, you know, and he would be giving up $50-60 million. That's just an example. I'm not speculating that's what's going to happen, but anybody could do that. So if that's the case, so for those crying about that, that's it's really working the system. Yeah,
sure. And I mean, I don't blame for what they did. My whole take on it was more that I don't think there's anything wrong with the rules, but I think he had to have had some contact or known that they were interested on some level and would likely sign him, because he's not giving that up for nothing. So he had to have had some word. And the way things turn so quickly from he's in there apologizing to everyone, he's going to, you know, show up, he apologizes to the veterans, he shows up to camp, and then 6 hours later, he posts the phone call with Gruden, which he knew would get him suspended and likely kicked off the team. Something happened during that stretch. And I'm not saying it's as thorough as, hey, we're going to sign you to this much money. It may have been something as little as, you know, Drew Rosenhaus contacting whoever at the Patriots and understood that there was interest, you know, something along those lines.
Oh, I'm not denying that, but just sticking to the bottom line. How many guys are going to be willing to give up the $30 million guarantee? So
he wanted to go win somewhere.
If that's what he wants to do, God, you know, Godspeed. But as we can see, it wasn't as simple as it's cracked up to be with all the other issues. I mean, it's just it's never ending. It's an ongoing drama. We'll see. But like you said, the Patriots, they got nothing to lose. And also a key thing, I didn't hear too many other people mention it, but I think Bill wanted to keep away from Kansas City. So it was more preemptive. He was a little worried there. Pretty much the AFC is looking like, why even bother playing? It's like, might as well have the championship game next week. And between them and KC, it'll be a major upset if it's not them two in the championship game.
I can already tell you what's going to happen. KC's going to lose to like the fucking Bengals or something in the wild card game or in the divisional game. And then we'll have Cincinnati. I'm already ready for it.
You never know. Sure.
I think Seattle was the other team really in the mix too, which would have been interesting if you put him there with Russell Wilson, because they got some good weapons too, but obviously lacking like that big time receiver threat. So it would have been interesting if he would have ended up there, because I think that could have vaulted them as well into at least, you know, the top position maybe in that division, or at least, you know, even with the Rams, if nothing else. The Rams will be an interesting test case. But we could talk about them a little bit as well. So they struggled to beat the Panthers in Carolina, which wasn't a shock, but they came out and won that. Do you foresee any sort of Super Bowl hangover with the Rams? Like, to me, them winning that game was a pretty good sign that maybe they'll, you know, overcome some of the issues that a lot of other Super Bowl losers have had in the past. Like, that's a game where they could have easily folded. The Panthers, you know, kind of came back, and they're in Carolina, and the Rams held strong and pulled it out. So was that a good sign to you for what their fortunes may be in this year?
I don't, as I went over in the preview, I don't see much of a hangover issues for them because their defense is solid. Aaron Donald might repeat as Defensive Player of the Year. And a big thing that I didn't see too many other people mention, Cooper Kupp was out. And right away, you see it in that first game. He's kind of Goff's emergency guy, third down guy, right? He looks for him. And that's his main dude, his security blanket. So that was a big loss for them in the playoffs last year. So I don't see that. Plus, McVay is a young, hungry coach.
Mm-hmm.
He's not gonna get complacent. He's gonna keep evolving. So I don't see any sort of hangover issues for them.
It's funny because I think there's some good comparisons to Atlanta too. You kind of have the young coach, the good defense, the solid quarterback, the weapons. And Atlanta obviously struggled coming off the Super Bowl. So it'll be interesting to see how the Rams. I think the Rams do have more talent than that Falcons team did. Overall, top to bottom, and they have a big game, which we'll talk about shortly this week. So they didn't. The schedule makers did not give them any breaks. Weeks 1 and 2. Another team that got no breaks and no favors done, Johnny, is yours truly's Jets. Their schedule was brutal coming out of the gate. Everyone knew that. This has happened to them recently a couple times where because the division is kind of soft and they finish toward the bottom, most of their schedule tends to be easy-ish. But it seems like they always end up stacked early and with that soft end later. So by the time they get there, a lot of times they're already in trouble. But coming off that Bills game, which I felt going in was kind of a must win in ways, because after that you get the Browns, the Pats, the Eagles, the Cowboys, and the Pats again. Like, that is a hellacious stretch right there. Now, you know, three of those five are at home, which helps. Actually, I'm sorry, four of the six are at home. So that helps. But after that, you get the Jags, the Dolphins, the Giants, the Redskins, the Raiders, the Bengals, the Dolphins. Like, it really opens up for them. So in my mind, as a Jets fan, I was looking just for like a 2-4 escape here, get to that soft underbelly, and maybe you have a sniff. That Bills game was a real bad one to lose. Anytime a team turns it over four times in the first half, you have a 16-point lead. It's really hard to give that one up. Now, CJ Mosley going down obviously played a major role because the defense completely imploded after that, and they couldn't get the last drive to win it. They also, to me, a play I haven't seen mentioned a lot in my review of this that I thought was a key one, and I don't know how much of the game you watched, but Marcus May dropped an interception that you could have handed to him in the end zone that ended up giving the Bills the field goal because he dropped it.
At 16-0, and
yes.
Also the stupid Gastineau-like Henry Anderson
yes,
awful. Penalty.
Yep. So both of those came on that same drive. So if neither of those happen, and you hold them 16-0, you know, now you're talking a little bit different, maybe the way it goes. But that said, they do lose, and then the news just goes worse from there. It was announced on Wednesday that Darnold was sent home from practice because he was ill. So many just thought, okay, flu, whatever. Then it was announced yesterday and revealed that he actually has mono, and he's out for at least the next likely to be three games, if not beyond that. I mean, the big risk with mono, of course, is you're susceptible to issues with your liver and with your spleen. So, you know, if those are inflamed.
Fatigue too.
Yeah, fatigue's a big one. But one of the big things is they're afraid, you know, if he gets hit and he's not fully healed, his spleen, you know, spleen can explode. So there's all kinds of shit. So he's probably going to be out at least for a while. I mean, at least until maybe that second Pats game on October 21st. So in comes Trevor Siemian. And looking at how things are going and what you just said with, you know, how things look with the Pats and Chiefs, you have to wonder. I'm not thinking they're going to go full Miami, but if they're 0-5 or 1-4 heading into the trade deadline time frame and Darnold is still a few weeks out, they do have some interesting trade pieces. Like, do you see a potential fire sale there with the new GM?
No, I don't see it at all. You can, cause especially for a team like the Jets, that hasn't been in the playoffs. What is it? We're on eight years in a row.
It's been a while. I mean, you could sell it as new GM. Everyone agrees that Maccagnan was not the best when it came to drafting. Yes, he could spend money. Yes, he brought in free agents. But the problem that he left this team is exposed with depth underbelly. And you're seeing it. And he never prioritized the O-line or cornerback. So there are tons of holes. And, yeah, they could probably patch on the fly. But is it, you know, is a five-win season worth it at the expense of maybe recapping some picks, which they desperately need? You know, could they give up Robbie Anderson, Leonard Williams, and someone else at the trade deadline and get some picks?
Maybe a big favorite would be Leonard Williams because they're right a contract year.
Yep, and Robbie Anderson, both are in contract years.
Yeah, that I could see, but I wouldn't see anybody that would be planning for the future for next year.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't think they'd get rid of any like Jamal Adams or anything. But I mean, guys in contract years, if you know, if you're sitting at 1-4, 1-5, whatever it is, you know, it's a lot easier to trade Robbie Anderson and move on. And then they're gonna have to get a number one anyway next year. So anyway, so we'll see how things go. That Monday night game definitely takes a little less luster now when it's Trevor Siemian against Baker Mayfield. But what did you think of the Browns week one?
Not much. I had in this in our season preview, I questioned all this hype about the Browns. Whether Kitchens, he had never coached a game before, so can this guy actually coach? And so far, you know, you can't judge by week one, but from what I see, Kitchens is a offensive side, offensive version of Rex Ryan. He's a player's coach. The guys like him, but what you see on the field is a shitload of penalties. Guys doing a stupid thing. A guy gets kicked out for you know, for kicking somebody, just undisciplined. Too much of a player's coach. It's only one game of rush judgment, but maybe he's a little too friendly. Can this guy coach? And we're going to see in close games. Can he come up with the you know the proper clock management? You know when to challenge. And all that play call and all that stuff. So that's still a big question mark for me. And of course, the diva wide receiver always making headlines for anything but wins and losses. You know, stupid stuff for the watch. Now he's crying about Greg Williams. It's the same stuff we saw with the Giants. It's always stuff that doesn't lead to winning. I mean, I have this debate with my co-host that, you know, who believes that he's not as big a diva and really wants to win. But there's some guys that they do want to win. But they don't know how to go about it, and he's in that category. He doesn't know how to go about it, and it looks like the age of the diva wide receiver is coming to a close. I think him and AB are about the last two fighting. I mean, a few years ago we had like Dez Bryant, we had a bunch of them, but I think as we go into 2020, that diva wide receiver is going to be played out, and that's not going to play anymore.
You could probably blame Browns fully on CTE as well, because I mean, he was fine until a couple years ago.
That perfect hit really sent him over the edge. That's a theory that a lot of people have, that he was fine until that perfect hit.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't hear much. I mean, you know, stuff here and there, but nothing this nuts at all. I mean, their O-line is obviously having major issues as well. I mean, Mayfield, whose you know accuracy has always been on point and scrambling, but he was just getting killed in that game. He had, what, 3 straight turnovers at one point, I think? And just constantly under pressure. So, you know, they spent a lot of money on weapons and upgrading here and there, but the O-line definitely has some holes and could be an issue. So, I mean, is there a path to a Jets victory here? I mean, Tennessee, who I think is a middling team at best, with a quarterback who Mariota, I don't know what you feel about him, but I don't know if he's significantly better than Trevor Siemian. I would say Bell is better than Derrick Henry. And so like, I think there's some pieces there that make you think, well, even without Darnold, you know, this is a big game for Cleveland, because we talked about the 0-2 thing. The Ravens looked really good, and I know it's hard to overstate because obviously Miami is completely in the tank. But even if you trim that game down a little bit, I mean, you got to think that they're obviously always going to have a very good defense. You know, they're still stout there. Great running game, and you know, if the quarterback can give you anything. And they're getting the Cardinals at home, and the Cardinals are feisty, but they may be looking at 2-0. So point being, the Browns could be in an 0-2 hole looking up 2 games back pretty quickly here.
I would pick the Jets. I think there is definitely a path. The Greg Williams factor, he's going to be knowledgeable of what Cleveland's doing. And as far as backups, I would put Siemian in you know the top half, maybe in the top 10 as back. I mean, he's not a stud. He's proven that, you know, over time, if he plays too much, he gets exposed. But he could go in there and win a couple games like he did with Denver. He's more experienced than most backups in the league. So I got the Jets in this one with the Greg Williams factor. And as far as putting Cleveland in the hole, whoever was on the schedule making committee is definitely not a Jet fan, and definitely has to have some ties to the Ravens, because that was a nice couple games for them to start.
For sure.
And the next thing you know, the ball gets rolling. They're 4-1, and they got some confidence, and then maybe they could even beat good teams, and that's how you get to go on a surprise division run or whatever. You got to get that good start.
Yeah, I mean, things toughen a little bit. So they're at KC week 3. Then they get Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati 3 straight. So they could really assert themselves. Even if they lose to Kansas City, I mean, they could take control of that division very quickly because they're going to get a shot at it with 3 straight division games. Cincy was feisty against Seattle, but I think that was a little bit of fool's gold. I mean, Dalton's never – that's like a career game for him.
Yeah, I'd be worried about Cleveland, and also with Baker, there was a timing issue, and that goes again. It goes back because Beckham only practiced about three times all training camp, so it goes to that timing issue.
Yep, and you wonder too, like, are there too many cooks in the kitchen there? Like, you got Kitchens, who's pretty much calling plays, but they also brought in a great offensive coordinator in Todd Monken, who, I mean, he was a head coach candidate. He was a finalist for the Jets job. Fans like myself were rooting for him to get the job over Adam Gase. But he, you know, you wonder, are there too many voices on that offensive room in there with between Mayfield and Beckham? You got Chubb, you got Hunt, you know, in there now. You got Kitchens, you got Monken. You know, is it just too much Landry? Like, they're all very vocal guys, like, with, you know, certain mindsets. So you do have to wonder what the chemistry is in that room.
But yeah, it's gonna take a while.
And I think you can't understate either Harbaugh with Baltimore. Like, we didn't mention him, we mentioned their talent, but a guy that's been there, he's won playoff games, he's won Super Bowl, you know, so it's like he has a steadying presence in a division with new faces, new players, and while the Steelers have some consistency, Ben looks like he's about washed, and they're obviously down two weapons. So you start looking at it, you're like, oh, maybe Harbaugh made the right call. You know, the rumors he may leave, but he stayed. He doubled down, and they've rebuilt that team quickly.
Yeah, top five coach, definitely. So he keeps him steady.
All right, for sure. All right, so let's talk Titans for a second. Obviously impressive against the Browns, but you wonder how much of that was inflicted by the Browns, how much was Tennessee's game plan. You know, I thought Vrabel showed signs last year of coaching aptitude. I just always thought it was like a talent thing with them, and I think it boils down to Mariota and lack of true weapons outside of Derrick Henry, who again has been up and down. They already again have a big division game here too against the Colts, 0-1, who with Jacoby Brissett almost beat the Chargers in LA. So, you know, this division is definitely up for grabs. The Texans lost a tough game. They're talented. And the Jags, even without Foles, you know, Dirk Diggler over here looks like a pretty good quarterback. Maybe Minshew, that could do something. So I think this division, and you mentioned it. You said what, all 8-8, right, at this one. So it's up for, and you picked the Titans. So I mean, it's up for grabs. You obviously feel good about the Titans, but did the Colts show you something of the way they played with Brissett on the road?
Oh, tremendous! It was all defense. Their offense worked smooth. But the reason why I was you know, not high, but you know, when you pick every 8-8. But one thing the Titans can do is their strength is their secondary, and if you could stop the pass, you know, that's you got a good chance of winning with Malcolm Butler back there, and they have that's the strength of that team is their secondary, so that'll keep them competitive.
For sure. So that, I mean, that's an interesting game because again, you're looking at the 0-2 principle that doesn't kill you in that division, but I think, you know, you mentioned Harbaugh, top five coach. Do you feel like Reich is already kind of ascending to that top upper echelon?
Yeah. So far, I was impressed by his first year, and yeah, the way he's got the team, and especially they came out that first game, they were ready. They heard all the Cleveland hype, and he had them fired up, and they dominated from the opening kickoff. And
well, that was so. That's Vrabel. I meant Reich, though, from Indy.
Vrabel. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with both of them, but but Vrabel especially, and Reich too. With that offense, they didn't really miss much of a beat with Luck.
No.
And the defense will improve. That was just I think that was just one of those week one things. So you saw that last year they had one of the top defenses. So
yep,
they'll be all right.
No, I agree. So that'll be an interesting division matchup. The other half of the division is playing as well. The Jaguars at the Texans. I mean, the Texans got to win that game. You know, they made all the moves that they made. I get it. Right at the Saints, tough game. Even though they had it won, they backed off in the last drive. Like, what are you doing? You're not watching Drew Brees end of game routine ever over the last, you know, decade plus. So tough spot there. They come home, Jags without Foles. I mean, if there's a must win on the board here, I think they're up there for it.
Yeah, the Texans, all their whole franchise is built around J.J. Watt. You know, you go into the stadium, there's pictures of him everywhere. But sometimes, like in a game like that, that's when you need him to put some pressure or something. You know, a lot of times when that's your big money player, and a lot of times he can't control the game or he can't have an effect on the game. That was a perfect opportunity there for them to steal one early and be on their way. But now it's going to be a struggle.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. So it'll be interesting to see if they can rebound from that tough loss. I mean, you know, O'Brien was looking smart there for a little bit toward the end when they won that game. Everyone's feeling good. And then, yep, they cough it up. And the Saints do what the Saints do, right? They hang in those games, and they often find a way to steal them. ref issues aside, still permeated.
Yeah, there was a little red flag though. Yeah. I was on the preview. I'm high on the Saints run away because of that defense, but I didn't like how they gave up. You know, two plays, 75 yards.
Yeah.
Even though Watson took a nice beating, they at least did it. They at least didn't do the prevent. They went aggressive. They went after him. Watson took a lick, but still, the Saints got to clean up their secondary.
All right, speaking of the Saints, why don't we just dive into that? Because that's probably the marquee game of the weekend here, at least one of the maybe the top two. Saints at Rams, NFC title game rematch. And, of course, after all the hullabaloo with the refs and the pass interference and everything else, they both come in here 1-0. Both look pretty good week one. Both had their flaws week one on the road in L.A. Who are you thinking here, John?
I'm going to lean towards the Rams, actually, because I think the Rams will want to prove that, hey, we didn't just win because of the shitty call or whatever, that we're, you know, that we're a good team. So, and they've been hearing that they got a gift to the Super Bowl only because of that shitty call. But everybody forgets that it was a tie game. Mm-hmm. The Saints had the ball in overtime, and the Rams made a big play on defense. They made the big pick on Breeves. So the Rams are tough too, but also I look for a close game because in the past you put the Saints on the road and it's easy. You could just bet against them, but in the past couple of years they really toughened up on the road. They're not just a home team, so I look for a close game. It could go either way, but I'll give the Rams the edge.
Yeah, and I think the big change for the Saints there, like on the road, is obviously the elevation of the running game as Ingram developed more and Kamara. And then the defense, like you said, getting stronger. Because when you had to rely on Breeze and the weapons outside, Jimmy Graham, and the, you know, like when they had just pure passing and that was it, they obviously struggled outside the dome. That was their beat. But to your point, as they've really fleshed out the rest of the team, they've strengthened on the road. So I'm taking the Saints in this, but I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to come down to probably a final play, final drive, final field goal. I don't see either team really pulling away in this one.
Thank God you didn't say it's going to come down to an officiating call.
No, hopefully not. We don't need that again. But I do think it's – I mean, this is, again, kind of a check-the-box game for these teams when you start looking way down. Like, they both obviously have playoff aspirations. You start thinking home field, right? I mean, a little bit, just a little bit. So, like, this could come in play down the road if they both finish 12-4 or whatever and get into the playoffs. So, you know, key win either way. Are the Dolphins really this bad, John? What's going on?
Yeah, they are. You got the guys that want the few good players they got left are telling their agents to force trades. Minka Fitzpatrick is the latest, and it's a rough spot. And especially for a first-year coach, like, okay, you tanked this year, but how do you know in two, 3 years when you load up, how do you know this guy knows how to win?
Yeah.
That's the same thing, you know, a lot of big fans are saying that about, you know, my shitty Giants that, you know, they should just tank, but... But I'm like, this fucking guy Shermer, he's got to prove that he knows how to win in the NFL because he already crapped out, you know, years ago. So you have to prove that you can win games. So I'm not too high on that tank and stuff. How do you know you have a coach and players that know how to win?
Yeah, there's definitely a brigade out there that you see, you know, kind of comparing it to the Astros in baseball, right? And, you know, short-term pain for long-term gain kind of thing. But to your point, there's so much question around. Not only is this coach good, also, like, is your GM good enough to nail these draft picks? Has that been proven yet in Miami? I don't know.
Yep.
Are free agents going to want to come there after the way they're treating this team? I mean, already now they're shopping Minka Fitzpatrick, who was a top pick last year. So, I mean, when you're thinking rebuild, they're talking immediate rebuild. And sure, it may work long term. And I have been adamant that I've said this even about the Jets and even the Bills. Their goal should have been, but this should have been 4 years ago, that be ready when Brady's done, right? And now I think he's hung on longer than anyone probably expected, but the whole goal should have been get a quarterback and be ready to compete when he's done, because as is, it's going to be real hard unless you really load up and figure it out to go in there and compete with Belichick and Brady. So the goal for these teams should be to be ready. I think Miami set themselves even back beyond that. Like, they're, you know, they're probably a good 3 to 4 years away. If you look at the Astros, I mean, they were rebuilding for years, and yes, they've put it together. But in baseball, it's also easier to build through the draft because you have so many draft picks, stash guys in the draft, and then bring them up at the same time versus football. You know, maybe you're getting a couple of top picks, but I mean, there's so many key positions. It's harder to rebuild that way long term when you gut it this low.
I'm glad you brought up the Patriots, because I hate to do this. We'll only spit on it for a couple minutes. But look at the Patriots. Their coach, owner, and quarterback, they kind of support somebody politically that's not very popular. And look what happened with the Dolphins. Supposedly they had this thing where the owner it was a you know the owner was supporting our president too, and a lot of the players like Kenny Stills said, you know, get me the fuck out of here because of that. So look how it tears up one team, but the other team, it's never an issue. You know, the one team is the winning organization, and the other team's a fucking constant losing organization. And so that's if you want to be the Patriots, you also have to be the Patriots off the field too, and not let those issues seep into the locker room.
Until you bring a rapist on board.
What's that?
Is that until you bring a rapist on board? I'm like an accused rapist.
Like even the Patriots, they brought in Michael Bennett, who's done nothing but run his mouth for 4 years about, you know, social justice. And now he comes to the Patriots and he shuts the fuck up. I mean, right, how do you – it's like the mafia. You take that oath and you shut up about anything besides football and winning. So that's what every other team should profess to be now.
The problem is it takes a long time to get there. I mean, they weren't like that immediately. You know what I mean? It took them to winning multiple Super Bowls. And,
yeah, you have to get those rings on your pillow, and then you could then start doing that. So right. Our problem is that some teams are so far off, and they're never even going to get close to that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, maybe Philly's probably the closest track at this point. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
Speaking of Philly, so they're on Monday night at Atlanta. You know,
Sunday. No,
Sunday night. Yep, sorry, Sunday night.
Sorry.
So yes. obviously the Monday night game we talked about. Sunday night. An interesting Sunday night game if the Falcons want to show anything, because I mean they just laid a complete egg up in Minnesota. I mean Dalvin Cook just made them their bitch. He just ran all over them.
Come on, man.
Not even close.
Not even Cousins passed like what 9 times under 100 yards. That was an embarrassment. That's a red flag for the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Their defense hasn't stopped anybody since the first half of the Super Bowl. Guys like Beasley and Grady Jarrett looked like they were beasts. I don't know if maybe they got paid and they haven't done nothing since. But that's a big red flag. Not just – I mean, you had to go put that as an L going into Minnesota. But the way they lost, it was just like Minnesota just lining up and running the whole stadium, knew they were going to run, and they just ran it right down their throat. That's not a good look for Atlanta. They got to bounce back or otherwise Bradley's going to be the first coach on the hot seat.
Yep. I mean, do you think Quinn's the first head coach? Like, is he top of your list for potential?
Bradley. Shit. Where'd I get Bradley from? Sorry. Quinn. Yeah.
Well, is Bradley, where's he? Is he in the Jacksonville? He is a coordinator somewhere. Might be.
Yeah. Quinn. Yeah. Quinn is
so
the.
Quinn, I think, is probably the number one hot seat coach right now, right? I mean, he's got to be.
With Gruden, number two, the Washington's Gruden.
Yep. And I may would have put Gase if it wasn't for the GM change.
Nah. He's gonna get a pass with especially with these injuries.
Well,
and
now
all
it
that.
Bails him out. Yeah, and Douglas is his buddy. Nah. Look, Gase is interesting because there's been a lot of back and forth about, like, obviously fans. He wasn't the number one choice, right? And fans still don't know if he's the right choice. He's already was kind of running his mouth at the press conference, but it's hard because of what he did behind the scenes to change the culture with the GM and everything. It's like, it's hard to be too upset about, because like if I'm a Jets fan and my trade-off was I have to deal with Gase for 2 years but I get Joe Douglas, or I would have kept Maccagnan and someone else, I think Douglas is probably the better choice to run the future of the franchise. So it is what it is, but I don't think Gase is going anywhere now. I think, to your point, I think Gruden for sure. I mean, any sniff of Rivera, or does he have too much cred right now?
If it goes bad, like 6-10, sure. No coaches, even though, especially coaches that, there's a lot of examples of coaches that got there and never got another sniff.
Right.
Like a years back, Fassel with the Giants, never got another chance. What's the guy with the Raiders? Callahan? A lot of those guys never, so even just getting there isn't good enough anymore.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. All right, one other big game is the Vikings at the Packers, both 1-0. Vikings looked absolutely dominant in not even having to pass the ball on Sunday. The Packers obviously struggled a lot Thursday night. How much of the Thursday night game do you chalk up to first game, shitty weather, a good Bears defense? Do you expect more from Green Bay, or do you think time's starting to tick on that offense?
Nah, I think that not just a great Bears defense. Mm-hmm. I think you could chalk that up to and. But on the flip side, though, you have to be optimistic for the Packers defense. They got younger. They ended their Clay Matthews era, and you know, with the new coaching staff, with your old boy from the Jets, Patine.
Yep.
They were really impressive, and you saw at the end where Rodgers was all over hugging him. You see how happy he was to finally have a defense. So I think that's something to look forward to, the continued improvement of the Packers D.
So where do you see this game going? Do you feeling Packers at home? Do you think the Vikings just beat up on a soft Falcons defense?
I think the Packers are going to squeak it out at home, but this is going to be one where one or two plays is it's going to be a tight one.
I mean, you got to be optimistic. Cook does look legit. I mean, he looks like a force right now.
Not like that offensive line. I don't know if it was just the Falcons laying down like dogs, but yeah, that offensive line. And Cook was 4 or 5 yards down the field before he even got touched on those plays. So that was a good start for Minnesota when you can just run it down their throat like that.
Okay, so there's one more game I want to talk about. But before we get to that, I just want to hit a couple of these other ones just to see if you have any quick thoughts. So we talked a little bit about the Ravens. What did you think of the Cardinals battling back? And what did you think of them playing for the tie? I liked it.
Yeah, with Murray, though, you're going to see, though, there were 4 or 5 passes where he's just so short that he doesn't even have a chance. They just get knocked down at the line. So that's going to be something to look forward to, in a couple of years when they want to contend and stuff. And he's going for winning drives. There's just some passes that just get broken up right away, and it's going to keep them from getting competitive. But it's tough to judge in that game because they played Detroit. I mean, come on, Matt Stafford even tried to give the game away at the end. He threw it right in the Cardinals' hands, right between the numbers. I mean, that's just typical. That's a typical Stafford. Nowadays, that's an example of guys that get rewarded. At least like Flacco, Manning, they won Super Bowls before they got overpaid, disgustingly rewarded. Now, like a quarterback, you could just have a good year or two and you get $25-30 million.
There's so much desperation at the position. Yeah. It's like, you look at all these guys, like, do you want to really let any of them go? You know, it's tough. What do you got?
He's got all the tools. He's got all the tools, but, man, I think when the money's on the line, he's going to let you down every time. And that was just an example, and the guy dropped it, but he threw it right in the Cardinals' hands, gave him the game right there.
Yeah, and I didn't mind the playing for the tie. They had battle all the way back, and I think coming out of there where the tie spoke for something for that game. And, it almost paid off because they punted instead of going for it. They almost got the pick, which, pinning the Lions deep probably gave them a better probability to maybe squeak it out versus, fourth and whatever on the – were they on, like, the 35 or something? It was a fourth and long. So I think playing it the way they did spoke something. The Lions really gave that one away. And it was good to see. I also think, David Johnson is going to be the biggest beneficiary of this Kingsbury offense. Yeah. I mean, he looked so much better. They were getting him out into space instead of banging him up the middle over and over. So I think that's going to be a big plus there. And it's good to maybe see Fitzgerald get to play with a young quarterback and a young offensive-minded coach before he's done. At least maybe he can help bring these guys up.
And also, just to bring an opposing argument to your point in the first half, when it was 17-0 and Kingsbury hit that field goal, it's like sometimes psychologically you don't want to go in with that zero on the board. Yep. You want to get that short three. And then also you cut it to 2 scores. So yep. I could see a point where you should have been aggressive and gone for the TD. But there's something coaches love to get that zero off the board. So even like if it's 24-0 or whatever, instead of going for it, they at least want to put that three up. It's a psychological thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was talking more at the end in overtime when they punted. Instead of going for it on fourth and whatever, because a lot of people were like, "Well, you're going to tie, midfield. Just go for it," and they pinned Detroit deep, and they almost got the pick, and then gave them the game winning field goal, so it almost paid off. But
yeah, that midfield decisions are tough, man.
All right, Dallas at Washington. Washington was feisty against Philly. I think they just don't have the talent. Darius Geis already hurt again. Out at least probably 6 to 8, I think I saw for him as the latest update. What did you think of Gruden's comments? Did you see what he said about Adrian Peterson?
Oh, yes.
Like, if I want to run 50 times a game, of course, like, why are you shitting on the guy? He might be your best running back. I mean, I know he's a piece of shit, but I mean, what are you doing? Like, that made no sense.
He was the only reason that they were, like, competitive last year, pretty much. And now he's got to go big, and now, the guy carries 2 times and gets hurt, and he's like, oh, we got to – got to go beg and give the ball to the old 35-year-old washed-up guy or whatever, who isn't washed-up.
That I had a shit on 3 days ago.
Yeah,
I think they're probably in trouble in this game. I mean, Dallas looked really good, really on point. Dak obviously trying to prove himself with this whole contract stuff going on. Zeke back. I thought the Giants gave a game. Like, I think folks thought maybe they'd get embarrassed, but I thought they looked fine in there, overmatched, but fine. I think Dallas is going to be battling Philly, obviously, at the top of that division. So games like this are must-wins for them because, Philly's going to win these games probably. So they got to just – if they want to hang and have a shot at the division, you can't lose at Washington right now.
I The bigger red flag for Washington was, though, they're paying like Norman and Landon Collins like $100 million combined, and DeSean Jackson in the second half was catching balls. There was nobody in the secondary was 30 yards from him. I mean, I don't think they spent their money wisely with their two top paid players, a safety and a cornerback, and it's not even paying off where they're shutting guys down. So yeah, they're in a rough spot. That division is so divided between. You got two Super Bowl contenders and two contenders for the top five draft pick. It's going to be like that all year, and I don't see much change in there.
How long do you think before Washington goes young at quarterback?
Yeah, probably about game 10 or whatever. Yeah. They'll let Keenum take the licks first. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so we talked about that. Seahawks at Steelers. Are the Steelers as bad as Sunday, or is it just a case where they piss their leg every time they play in New England and that's it? There's nothing else you can do about it.
Oh, the Steelers, yeah. I was expecting a little more out their defense. But also, offensively, they were out of sync. I think maybe some of the backup outside of Juju, some of the other receivers besides Brown were probably a little too keyed up to kind of show their stuff without Brown, and they dropped some balls. So I would just cross that off. I think the Steelers are going to be fine. I'm still confident in them winning division. Maybe not so much a Super Bowl, but
it'll be interesting. I mean, they got to show some pride at home this week. After, I mean, that was just a drubbing, and what they just cannot play there. And they do the same stupid things. They constantly do the same stupid shit when they play up there. The zone, they sit back. Like, I don't get it. I'll never understand the way they play in New England. And they,
the first half, they hung in there a little defensively, but then it just snowballed,
Always. Seattle struggled quite a bit at Cincy. Or home. Actually, they were home, right? Did Cincy go in there?
Seattle was home. That's not a surprise. That's typical Seattle. They don't beat down people. They keep a lot of shitty games. They keep close with shitty teams.
But I mean, I like Wilson a lot. I do think he's built to win, knows how to win in big spots. And I mean, it's as a guy watches them often. He is someone that just knows when to turn it on. Right. So they'll run, and then all of a sudden fourth quarter explosion. And he seems to do it often. And their running game is really good. I think this will be a very good game. I think Seattle goes in this and wins.
Pittsburgh? Nah. Yeah. I'm going to go the opposite. I don't see the Steelers going 0-2. I'll go Steelers.
Put them in the hole. I'm putting the Ravens are taking control of that division this week. They're going to be 2-0, and Pittsburgh and Cincy will be 0-2. Cincy's home for the 49ers, who also, of course, they're coming off a win against Tampa. So that was an ugly, ugly, sloppy game. I mean, one of the sloppiest games ever. There's so many turnovers. Seven? It was something ridiculous, like 7 touchdowns got overturned for penalty, I believe. It was something ridiculous like that. So that'd be an interesting one. I think the Bengals were fool's gold in that game. John Ross looked great, but for whatever reason, Seattle just couldn't stop him. I don't think Dalton's going to play like that again. It looks like Mixon's going to play. Obviously, Tevin Coleman's down for the Niners, but they'll run Breida. I like San Fran in this game. I think it's going to be low scoring, though.
Cincy at home, I think I'll go with Cincy at home.
I can't pick Dalton, you know it.
But I think addition by subtraction, Cincy has got to at least get a little better, but finally get rid of Marvin Lewis. And eventually when the Dalton era is over, they won't have that hanging on their heads. But I'll give Cincy at home. San Fran had a couple of gifts from Jameis. That spurred them in that first victory. So I'll go Cincy at home.
They're about to get the same presents from the Red Rifle. Any belief the Bills can be a wild card team, or was that more the Jets giving that up?
Nah, the scheduling gods, or whatever you want to call them, which they're not gods to you, helped out the Bills too. With if you're going to put them on the road for the first two games, it's nice to put them in the same stadium, and also where there's going to be half Bills fans there. So that's another one. They could spur an unlikely 2-0 start to an unlikely wild card run, and I think McDermott's got something special. He's got a chance to be a top 5 or 10 coach I like his style. And also Allen, man, that first half, if you look on Twitter, he throws some ugly passes where he looks like the worst quarterback in the league. But then he makes some plays that very few quarterbacks can make, like that little run for that first touchdown. That's a play where only Cam, Lamar Jackson, Watson, with that elusivity, with that running ability, can make. So I think Allen's got a little something. He's tough. So they got a shot.
And I was happy watching that game because I thought the Jets actually contained him well. So, I mean, he beat them otherwise, which was impressive. I mean, I thought they kept him in the pocket. Like, he didn't run all over him like he did last year. So, yeah, I mean, there's always a team that ends up 2-0, 4-1, like you mentioned earlier, and then they're off and running. And it looks like possibly the Bills here, unless the Giants get in the way. Bell didn't have a great game, but he ran on them a bit. I think Barkley will do the same. So I think it's just going to come down to Barkley, and then if Eli can do anything in the air to compensate for them stacking the box eventually on Barkley, I think Ingram's set up for a big game. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do it. Let's talk about the kind of last big game we haven't talked about, and we'll end on that. And that is the Bears at the Broncos. Both teams 0-1. And I saw a cool stat about Denver, and I believe it's something like in the first 2 weeks of the year, they've never lost a home game since it's like 20 years. It's something ridiculous that they've never lost a home game in the first 2 weeks of the year, basically, in the last like 20 years or something. So that'll be tested severely here, home for Chicago. Flacco did not look great at Oakland, but they also let him down a lot. Didn't have a ton of protection. He had some crucial drops. Emmanuel Sanders dropped the big pass. The Bears D looks sharp as ever. I'm not the biggest Trubisky fan. I really don't think he's that good. I think they did a great job propping him up last year. I didn't see that as much on Thursday night. Their personnel usage is odd. They didn't really go to Montgomery as much maybe as they should have. They barely used Cohen. They just had him kind of split out wide and didn't look his way. Trey Burton is a waste. So I don't know. Allen Robinson did look great, by the way. He just couldn't get the ball to him. I mean, you should have had like 250 yards, I think, receiving. He was wide open so much. But they're an interesting team. I'm picking the Broncos in this. I'm going by history, and I'm going by the fact that there's always that one team you think is going to be good that starts off 0-2, and all of a sudden things unravel. And I don't like Trubisky, and I thought they made some questionable decisions, and I think the Broncos squeeze us out at home like 13-10 or something stupid like that.
I agree with you on every point about the Bears, but I thought the Broncos look worse.
So. Oh, they look like shit. I mean, they're probably going to lose.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, Flacco always looks like shit, and then he pulls these games out. It's like, it wouldn't shock me if all of a sudden he turns it back.
And it wasn't necessarily Flacco. Yeah. There's a lot of drops. There's those receivers. I don't put it all on Flacco, but I'm only going with the Bears because of the extra few days rest that Thursday. But I agree with you. You make a ton of great points about the Bears. Just awful for them to abandon the run. Just awful around. I'm with you. I'm down on Trubisky. I like his scrambling abilities and his running abilities. But as far as throwing, he could have four or five picks that that Green Bay dropped. Just wasn't. I'm not high on. I think Nagy's got a lot of breaks last year as far as no injuries and as far as carries that defense. He's an offensive coach, and his team was carried by defense. So he's got a lot to prove that. And also, I don't like that they're still in that. What's still in the head is that stupid kick last year. Yep. They still want to blame Cody Parker. I mean, here it was, 7-3. They're driving the ball good. They got it to the Packers 33. And then for the next three plays, they crap out. So it's a 4th-and-10 on the 33, and you're down 7-3. Now, if you give Pinero a shot there, and he boots that 50-yarder, it's 7-6, and the crowd finally goes crazy for the first time. And all you need is a field goal. Maybe you could shut down they were shutting down the Packers pretty well. But he's so shook still last year by stupid Cody Parker. He didn't even give his kicker a chance to kick a 50-yarder. And it's not – I can understand it's in December, wind and cold or whatever, but it's the first game of the year. The weather's not a factor. If you got a kicker and you don't even have confidence in him to give him a 50-yarder, then why even bother having him on the team?
Right.
You might as well just have Cody Parker back, whatever. So that shows no confidence. There's more of a chance of making a 50-yard field goal than there is of getting a 4th-and-10. So that was an awful call.
Especially with Trubisky.
Right,
I mean, if you're saying 4th and 10 and you got Breeze, you got Rivers, you got Brady. I mean, fine. Okay. you know, yeah. I get it. But, I mean, with Trubisky out there in a game where he's not exactly lighting it up to try and go fourth and 10, is you're almost better off just punting and trying to pin him inside the
and
10.
No, but not only that, if you have no faith in your kicker like right. he does, and you know you're going to go for it on fourth down, right. on second or third yes, down, yes. do a draw so yep. you make it like a fourth or four, cause, yes. which is exactly what happened on the fourth and 10. He scrambled and he got 4 or 5 yards.
Yep.
So at least plan ahead and make it a. If you say, hey, if my kicker sucks, I don't have no confidence. I'm going for it on a fourth no matter what. So at least you know make it a manageable fourth down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was I felt naggy. That was awful. So
that whole game had some weird personnel decisions. I will not get. You know, I was excited because Mike McCarthy, for whatever reason, put Aaron Jones in the shine box and he loved Jamal Williams. And I'm thinking, all right, well here's Matt LaFleur. He's known to be an offensive guy, even though he had not the best offense in Tennessee, whatever. Reputation is such. Aaron Jones, fully healthy. You know, he's got, I think, the highest yards per carry average last year, over 5 a carry. And here we are, yet again, running fucking the corpse of Jamal Williams over and over again with Jones barely on the field in passing situations. That was questionable, too. So I'm looking for both these teams to turn around their play calling this week because that game was just abysmal across the board.
Yeah, Green Bay's offense definitely wasn't overly impressive, and even Aaron, even Rodgers looked a little shaky. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I still like the Bears' defense to end that little Broncos streak. That great stat that you pulled up, I think that's over with. Yeah, the Broncos' offense showed nothing.
All right, who's your team with the most to prove this week after everything we've talked about?
Oh, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They got to go on the Sunday night at home. If they come out flat or if they let the Eagles walk on over them, it's already, like we discussed, it's going to be tea time for Quinn.
Give me your handicap on the Dolphins, plus what to win that game.
Oh, come on.
I think they're 18.5 on the board.
I already think their under over was, like 4? I think Vegas had probably brought that down to about 2.
Zero.
It's got to be like 2, yeah.
It's probably a half. It might be a half. Yeah, so that'll be interesting there.
When was the last time a 19 a team on a 19 favorites?
Oh, I mean, not this early in the season.
It's on the road too. It's in Miami,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, not this early too. Like you may get that like week 17, week 16, where a team is 1-14 or something. Never week 2. I mean, that's a rarity. Especially the Pats, who aren't like the most high powered team anymore. Like this isn't the 07 Pats. I mean, they're obviously very good, but yeah. It's ugly. I mean, it's just an ugly scene down there, and it's going to get uglier. Is there a player that you feel has the most to prove this week?
Definitely Flacco.
Yeah. Roethlisberger?
Even though it's a tough Bears. Nah, I think it was just a
bad game.
Plus the Patriots. That's another thing mm-hmm. we got to look at. The Patriots defense that was a lot of their fans were saying was the worst defense of all time in the middle of last year. Now this is two games in a row where they've only given up a field goal mm-hmm. to the Rams and the Steelers, two of the best offenses in the league. So is that trend going to continue, or are they going to eventually weaken a little? So that's something to look forward to.
All right. Well, lots to look forward to both in the NFL and, of course, over at PlaceMeNation.com. We have multiple feeds. We get the PTBN pop feed. We get the PTBN wrestling feed and lots of cool stuff dropping each and every day. John, you and I do a podcast together, the Extreme Three-Way Dance, where we're looking through the history of ECW along with Jennifer Smith. That drops on this coming Monday. It's every other week. Stay tuned for that. Also over on that feed, we have a new Talking WCW with Jenny, Tim, and Greg looking at Rick Rude. Ben Zanny every week is in there with Row One, Seat One, talking to various folks and friends throughout the independent wrestling scene. And then, of course, the Place to Be podcast, the Mothership. Myself and Scott this past week had Kelly Nelson on as we wrapped up the 80s and MSG with the December 1989 Madison Square Garden house show. Over on the pop feed, chock full with stuff from pop culture and comics. The new Hard Traveling Fanboys welcomed in WWE referee Jason Ayers to talk some comics. Also had a new DC4U. We had the debut of a brand new show, Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast. Siblings Kevin and Mary are rewatching The Office. They're into starting season 3 now. We just picked them up for the feed, so looking forward to that. A really good episode of Freak Out Drive-In. Jenny welcomes in brother Nate Milton to look at Get Out. And of course, we're recording this, John, and airing on Friday the 13th, so it's a fitting time if you want to go check out some horror live watch. It's a good one to do.
That's highly recommended.
Yeah, that's got the D'Amato stamp right there.
A lot of love for Little Ro, one of my dudes, yes.
Very good, very good. New Looking Forward, Looking Back, a new Marvel Age. I joined Jenny and Tim on Pop Goes to the Couch. We looked at season 3 of Glow. And be sure to check out Geek and Sassy as well. They have a brand new giveaway contest. Check that out and follow their social media to win the prize. And finally, I also joined Timmy and Jen on the newest Talkin' Pop, We talked dieting, weight loss. We talked religion and politics. So it's a hot button episode for sure. So check that out. And of course, continue to vote in the Greatest Song of the 80s tournament. Follow our social media there, PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s tournament on Facebook, or just follow us on Twitter. Polls are up each and every day. We're into round four. John, you've been voting religiously?
Of course.
Very good.
Today, there's a lot of Michael Jackson, a lot of MJ debate.
All right, we'll see how that plays out. All right, that'll do it for us. I had a great time filling in for the Cowboy. Hopefully he's healed up and healthy. He'll be back here next week with you, D'Amato. But I'm free to step in anytime. And I had a great time talking football with you.
Hey, you're nobody's replacement. You're 1A.
Yeah, sometimes. I don't mind being 1B every now and then. All right, that'll do it. Everyone, enjoy the games. We'll talk to you next week. Or I won't. But John, see you.
Peace.